And it basically talks to a turnaround strategy that needs to be implemented within the crime intelligence environment. We're focused on, first of all, the critical vacancies that needs to be filled. Then resource matrix is to be developed for the intelligence collection and the analysis capability so that we have a good understanding of what exactly the resource requirements are.
It also includes the technological requirements for cybercrime and surveillance that will be determined. Then as far as firearm and transport violence is concerned, the intelligence analysis centers to be established on those two matters at both national and provincial level. The additional members also need to be trained and deployed in the SADC countries as well as countries where we have the trade agreements with. And then lastly is the counterintelligence strategy that is currently under development and that will also be implemented. Talking to the vetting of personnel, the security vetting of SAPS employees, the vetting of personnel security strategy is currently in process of being developed and it will be implemented in flowing into the next financial year. That includes a review of the human resource policy framework to reflect vetting at entry level and career, as far as career mobility is concerned, what specifically the requirements are and what developments needs to be done as far as that is concerned. Talking to the polygraph and vetting capability, once again, there's also a resource matrix that is currently being developed for that to determine the requirements associated with specifically those two environments. The security vetting appeal board needs to be properly established and capacitated. And then lastly, in that specific environment, talking to the guidelines and standard operating procedures that talks to the security vetting processes within the South African Police Service.
Maybe just on those two slides, I think we must welcome the fact, the initiative by the National Commissioner to, you know, the issue of additional members to be trained and deployed as liaison officers, especially in the SADC countries and other trade agreements. I think the committee mentioned it due to our overseas visits that we picked it up as a current issue that needs urgent attention, especially those countries where crime syndicates operate. So I think National Commissioner, well done there. We appreciate that.
Chair, moving to the next dimension, the collaborative and consultative approach to policing. Basically, as far as the community relations is, the strengthening of community-centered approach is concerned, there's a number of strategies and frameworks that has been identified to be finalized. Now, the first one talks to formalize and implement the local policing framework in support of the local prevention, the local crime prevention framework of government. It emphasizes the fact, again, to establish that collaboration at local level where the policing approach or the policing activities are aligned with activities implemented by local government. Also, the community policing strategy, also to support the implementation of the community safety plans, the rural safety strategy, development of a rural policing infrastructure to determine what exactly the policing requirements are within the, as far as the rural areas are concerned, youth crime prevention, the moral fiber investment strategy, as well as the traditional policing concept. So those are all policies and frameworks and strategies that are currently under development and will be implemented in due course. The revitalizing of strategic partnerships, the National Commissioner has already initiated engagements with strategic partnerships. I think the ones that we recently dealt with is Business Against Crime and SABRIC. The intention is to have an integrated multidisciplinary partnership strategy implemented and then to revise the memorandum of understanding that are associated with all the strategic partnerships. The establishment of a partnership steering committee at national level to facilitate the relationship with all the strategic partners. And then for each one of the strategic partners that we've identified, we need to develop a proper action plan that will be associated with that specific partnership. And a specific strategy that's been identified as far as this environment is concerned is the cash movement strategy where your principal role players will include Business Against Crime and SABRIC. The professional and capable SAPS, building a professional and capable SAPS, talking to the consolidation and the review of the SAPS transformation efforts, the approach as far as the transformation in SAPS is concerned to ensure that we have a relevant and viable transformation plan on the table. Addressing the matter of integrity management and all the efforts that is associated with that. Then also the development of reviewed SAP service delivery charters, that's from national down to local levels, and also your service promises that has been developed in consultation with communities. The anti-corruption strategy has been identified as a strategy that needs to be implemented as soon as possible, and then also the prevention of criminal conduct within SAPS, a specific strategy that talks to that. When we're talking about the utilization of resources within SAPS, First of all, the focus is immediately now on regulatory framework requirements that needs to be determined, what exactly is prescribed, what is required in terms of the regulatory framework associated with SAPS, and to develop an integrated SAPS resource plan and associated matrix, then also the development of standard operating procedures for resource distribution to ensure that we have equitable distribution of resources. Specifically problematic area that's been identified is the contract management issues, and there's a contract management strategy that is currently being developed and will be implemented. Then the SAPS ICT IS strategy and implementation plan informed by the policing demand is implemented. And then as far as human resource capital is concerned, there's three matters that we need that we will be attending to soon. And that are currently being attended to is the recruitment, selection, and retention strategy. Then the employee development strategy that focuses on operational readiness, mentorship, leadership development, and talent management. And then also lastly within that environment is employee health and wellness strategy. Then as I previously indicated, Chair, we will soon commence with the conducting of an employee morale climate study within SAPS. And once those results are known, we will then proceed with the implementation of employee morale improvement plan based on the findings of the morale survey. Performance management. National Commissioner initiated a process. We will have to do a proper historical assessment of the achievement of strategic goals, looking at SAPS, what we've committed to over the medium term, and which ones of those commitments have been achieved and to what extent. Then also the development of a mechanism to measure client expectations, service specifications, and levels of satisfaction that needs to develop. That basically means it's talking to people, determine what exactly the expectations are, and how SAPS is responding to that. Then the development of performance measurements to appropriately reflect input, outputs, outcomes, and impact. The alignment of organizational individual performance. The alignment of the requirements of the oversight bodies. We have to make sure that our performance monitoring mechanisms address exactly what is expected from the oversight bodies. Performance reporting specifications to be determined, and then as the General also included your resource or your target setting criteria that needs to be developed that is informed by the current competency of SAPS with reference to resources, capabilities, etc. Compliance, the assurance provisioning, currently we've prioritized the combined assurance within the organization. I mean, what the committee is already aware of is the current processes that we're busy with to properly manage the AGSA processes, or the interim and audits. And then effective risk management in support of achievement of strategic and operational objectives. We are currently reviewing the risk management process that is applied by the South African Police Service in consultation with IRMSA, the Institute for Risk Management South Africa, to see if we can, or if we are in a process to develop a optimized process or strategy or operational approach to deal with risk management. Chair, that concludes the overview of the specific deliverables that has been identified.
Thank you very much for that and also the input. Members, we will go to questions and then we will go to the other presentations. Maybe the first thing from my side, and then I'll go to Honourable Caleb Barnard. Are you? Yeah. General, maybe the one issue I think you've raised previously in our meeting in December, the issue of how to ensure that police officers are held accountable, and also the issue of dealing with criminality within SAPS. Now, I think you've, in the previous meeting with us, indicated the issue of lifestyle audits is a priority for you. Now, we've seen this last 2 to 3 weeks. I mean, there was the court case in the Western Cape where two brigadiers, former brigadiers, and one former provincial commissioner was found guilty by the court of corruption-related accounts. We had various allegations made in a bail application in Cape Town with regard to senior police officers in the Western Cape. We've seen a senior officer of the Hawks being sentenced, I mean, other province. Now, in terms of your immediate priorities, dealing with criminality in terms of SAPS, what are you going to do to ensure that confidence from the public is fostered, that we deal with the criminal element in SAPS? Because every high-ranking officer of SAPS that appears in court where there's questions about diminishes the standing of the South African Police Service. So can we maybe get a short game plan from your side? How do you deal with that? Because I think the issue of lifestyle audits of your senior echelons is critical, because we can't have, again, scandals of procurement, extra money, second sponsored vehicles and holidays and things like that. We can't have that. So if you maybe on that side can really lay down the law, we'll appreciate that. Honorable Molabatsi and then Honorable Kalabona.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I asked this question last week, but I'm going to ask it again. When you speak of post-parole strategy, to me it sounds more of a correctional service strategy. Can you tell me how this will be implemented and how are you going to monitor it? My next one is on when you spoke of cybercrime strategy, you just said it will be implemented soon. What is worrying here is most of your crimes are cyber related, but you just said soon. How soon is soon? My third one, how many checks? I can just go. In December, before Christmas, when you spoke to us about your clamping of firecrackers, it was like you are on top of it. But to my surprise, in my street only there were four outlets, illegal firecrackers, selling to up to four-year-olds. I remember one day I had to intervene where I saw a four-year-old being given a cracker and a matches. So how successful is this, or how successful was it? Because when I spoke to one of the policemen in my area, it was like I'm dreaming. He didn't even know what I'm talking of. Yeah, for now I'll stop there. Let me come with another one.
Yeah, welcome. Honorable Kola Barnard and then Honorable Mula. And then I'll honor all those other members.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. You referred to the illegally occupied unused buildings. I mean, it's a massive problem, especially in city centres where buildings are invaded and are often sold illegally. They print up fancy paperwork, they sell it to Fred, who sells it to Jenny, who sells it. And the ones that you're eyeing, do you know or are you able to ascertain whether they are privately owned and someone simply abandoned them because they couldn't pay the rates or couldn't be bothered to renovate them, or are they public works buildings? Because public works has lost thousands of buildings, lost them, literally do not know where they are. It was very amusing to see on their schedules they actually put all the lost buildings in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean because those were the coordinates. They literally don't know where they are. So are these the kind of buildings that you're looking at that have been invaded? Are they private? Are they public works? And in both of those instances, what is your approach? What do you do if Fred has abandoned a building and now the city's stuck with it and it's a slum building and you have to deal with it because it's harboring criminals, but when you take the criminals out, others are going to just move in. So what's your strategy in that regard? And I've only got two for the moment. I watched and watched and watched all the way through, and then finally you used the three words rural safety or rural security or rural safety strategy. You said that's still under development. Now, I have to tell you that when farmers in this country, the people who grow our food, were assured when the commandos were disbanded by Thabo Mbeki overnight, although they'd worked very well with the previous National Police Commissioner, Fivus. That was, what, five or today, maybe six presidents ago. They were assured there would be specific, effective, well-resourced rural safety units under the SAPs, but there aren't. A lot of the stations that I've been to have got the paperwork down, but they actually don't have the manpower, the personnel to go out and do the job that is laid out on paper. So it's unimplementable. Last night, the farmer of the year, Charles Back, was attacked at his farmhouse in Park, and he's in ICU. Now, I don't know if he was tortured. That's become the norm now. Frequently these days, actually nothing's stolen. They simply go in, torture the people, usually to death, and then leave. So it's a very bizarre development that's happening. But I'm not seeing a new tone and a sense of urgency that one can take to farmers and say, yes, it's going to be dealt with. Yes, they're taking it seriously. Three words in a presentation like that didn't do it for me, and this gives me absolutely nothing to take back to people. I'm noticing that farmers around the country are hiring private security firms with helicopters to go after perpetrators of crimes on farms, and frequently SAPS members go in the helicopter. They pick them up, come in there, then they go there, then they catch the guys, and then the officer does the arrest and takes all the credit for the arrest that actually is by a private security firm at huge cost to the farmers who are already paying your salaries. So I don't know that this is being taken sufficiently seriously, especially in the light of the fact that stock theft in your last results soared through the roof. That's telling me there's actually no control at all in the rural areas. And to say that you are working on a plan is very depressing for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Colonel Barnard, Honourable Mamula, and then we'll go to the other members.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. I heard you are talking about the provincial and station drug action plan. You said it is implemented and linked to provincial drug master plans and local drug action plans. When was it implemented? And how many provinces have implemented? If it's not implemented, will you please tell us the timelines? When are you going to implement it? Because these drugs are affecting us, more especially in schools. My second question is on General Sithole and General Tsumane. Last year, General Sithole, you were not in the portfolio because you were in the Lekgotla. Can you please update us about the Petla issue? Is she suspended, or are there any investigations? My third question is this of the Northern Cape Mabula issue investigating the IP or what? Can you please tell us about what is happening? Because we see in news that everyone is going to be arrested, and we don't know what's happening because you don't update us. Can you please tell us? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mula. Honourable Mabija, are you covered at this stage? Yes, Honourable, yes. Imam Sheikh.
Thank you, Chair. All right, the first one, Commissioner, Chair spoke to about the vetting issue, but I just wanted to emphasize what process you're going to put in place to have a continued vetting or some kind of polygraph testing, because where there's collusion or corruption amongst police officers, they come there innocent, they come there clean. They become corrupt, they collude after that. So what process can be put, and I know it's an issue of labor and things that comes in and gives you hard time. What can you do to continuously monitor these people through some kind of vetting or so, which is lifestyle audit, but also, you know, that every week coming in here and you're doing in a test or something like that, you know, so that we can try to prevent the situation of them colluding with others. Now, the other thing is this, Commissioner, I've never had a chance to ask you this, but I have asked the others. My understanding is this, that you as the police cannot deal with this problem on your own. And that's why at some stage with the previous commissioner we discussed the kind of NMBs or where you bring basic education, SEPs, the correctional social development, all together to be able to identify, because the challenges in especially based on the socioeconomic conditions under which our people are living, and that is actually contributing to the high levels of crime. And in my understanding, SEPs is supposed to be preventing crime, but you are spending more time dealing with crime. So I'd like to know, how are you going to engage all these people to come to a common platform and identify and address all the challenges to create a better environment which will maybe help to prevent crime? The other issue is this, you know, we talk about drugs and firearms, and yes, we were addressing the issues in some of the areas. I know there's been some success recently with SEPs, and commend you for that. But I find, and I'll give you an example, you go now, maybe commissioner should take a few mandrakes with me, go out of the thing. I come out and you'll see nobody will check you at the borders. Nobody will check you at the airport you'll be coming through. So for me, I want to know, what are we going to do about these port of entries? Because that seems to be where a very great percentage of our drugs and things are coming through. Now, the issue of gangsterism and a whole lot of crime that's committed, and I've asked this previously, but I've never really got a response. Have we ever done an exercise, Commissioner, where, now remember, let's give an example, a particular police station like in Hanover Park. My understanding is this, that the police, they must know every criminal in that area if you're there for 60, 70 years. If you don't know, you're not doing your job. Now, I want to go one step further. You have only got a limited number of detectives with a whole, about what, a couple hundred files some of them have to investigate. Have you ever done an exercise to find that those criminals that are getting arrested and either getting released or getting small sentences or whatever it is, whether there's any collusion with the detectives? And when I say this, I mean, is it the same detectives that are handling those matters of the same suspects regularly or often enough that there's a collusion there, and that's why these criminals are getting out? Because a lot of them are repeat offenders. And the question is, why are they repeat offenders again and again and again? So I don't know if we have a way to see whether it's the same detectives handling the same criminals at them. Now, part of your problem, in my understanding, our problem, is the influx of foreigners into the country with no control mechanisms at all. They're in charge of the sex trade at the moment. They're in charge of the drug trade at the moment. They own our children. There's a whole lot going on. I'd like you to tell us, is there anything specific you're going to do and to clamp down on this, so that whilst we appreciate that foreigners are coming in here based on the circumstances in their countries, but of course I think it's got to be limited, it's got to be reasonable, and you know, it cannot be just a free one. Now, a very important thing here for me is, which I've spoken about before, so car theft, car hijacking, and I'm glad that we spoke about our involvement in SADC, because a lot of our cars are in the SADC region, that I can tell you. Some by these owners and some that have been theft. What are we going to do to ensure, because remember, a car that is being stolen more often than not, it's either being stolen for the parts, because they're buying them for 3,000 and 4,000, and you can get the best of cars. They are buying them for parts, so there's a market for it. What are we going to do to close that market in terms of the scrapyard, the motor vehicle scrapyards, together with the corruption of the licensing department and the roadworthy centers that are giving roadworthies, passing these vehicles, licenses with corruption, providing new roadworthy registration papers, and the vehicles are on the road with another number plate and things like that. So there's a lot of collusion there that I want to talk about. Can I, a couple, of, two, three more, Chair? Okay. Now, you know, whilst I appreciate that we, and I've heard repeatedly that we have a challenge in terms of motor vehicles for the police stations. And yes, we do. But repeatedly we find police vehicles. I can tell you now, I had the opportunity of phoning the provincial commissioner in the Western Cape about 2 weeks ago, telling him there's a vehicle parked here, should not be here, from the Nyanga police station. It parks here every day for 10 hours or 12 hours or 13 hours a day. And they intervened immediately. I now found one from your public order policing. I've got the details. I haven't given it to any. It seems to be abused that these vehicles are being taken by officers and parked by their homes and whatever it is for half the night, or, you know, out of 24 hours, I think they spend more time there than in the station. So how do we complain that we have limited resources, but they appear to be... Now, Commissioner, we've also heard SEPs tell us here that you have a very, very good relationship with the Justice Department and SEPs. I'm of the opinion that is not true. Having spoken to police officers on the station and different stations, that is not true. The police are doing everything to apprehend the criminals. The Justice Department just want to get it off their roll. And that is the difficulty you're having. So there's no cooperation and coordination between the two of you. And then I wanted to know two more things. One is is there a specific thing we intend to do about the vulnerable people, especially people like farm owners and things who seem to be getting murdered because of their locality and things like that? And finally, we spoke about professionalizing of police officers. And I want to reiterate that if we want to employ and make professionals into police officers, and if we do that after for those that have finished their grade 12, with the very high unemployment rate in the country, you are not going to get those who have a passion for policing. I want to know whether we could integrate that into school curriculum, some subjects, so when they finish matric, then they go and do their three-year degree or whatever it is to then come. Then we can really call them professional South African police officers. Thank you, Charles.
No, thank you very much. No, Jefferson, one will welcome the vision as presented by the commissioner, though then one understands that it might not necessarily be his fault, I think, as a country, seem to be doing things in a very, very different way. Totally confused at times. But, you know, with that good vision, Commissioner, I want to find out whether then there has been a kind of an attempt to align this whole thing with the budgetary processes. Because it's no use to dream big and have no capacity to put the dots on the sense required. Can just remain a vision, which is non-actionable. Have you tried that? And what methodology of alignment of a budget process have you adopted, so that we can actually then begin to move away from this syndrome that I think is Professor de Klerk or what, complaint of fiscal dumping, no progress at all. That is the first issue. Then the second issue. For the vision to succeed, it needs management. People who are going to be the drivers of this. Have you actually sat down to say, my management at my disposal is actually then ready? It means I've got right tools for the execution of this mammoth task. What has been done to actually then bring on, you know, there is something that you raised that you're being invaded by some unknown cyber criminals and all that. And I just said to myself, Chairperson, at times I will find it very, very impossible to think that a police officer whose duty is to enforce the law will also just become an IT specialist without having some sound partnership with people responsible for that. Like, for example, our recent visit to UK, where you have got this digital board, policing board, which then navigates the path almost 20 years or 100 years as to what will be happening within the cyberspace and all that, and then devolving such capabilities to the securocrats. Now, what is it that you can then develop? Because to develop in order to reach this particular thing, so that maybe also as this committee we can actually then not just lambast you, but just try to say this can be a way forward, and how can it be mobilized? Because, for example, in UK, those people are business people, and they also develop this and then put it to all these countries of the world. In fact, they form, it's an enterprise move by them to say, we develop this, whatever product that we have developed or that we have declassified in terms of us, we are then going to sell it. So you can just see their initiative, that it's talking to each other and all that. Now, where are we? Can we? What is it that will have to be done in order to actually then reach this particular level? Because I can actually see two simple things that, for example, the general responsible for IT will just develop magic. I think that will be a pipe dream. What is it that will have to be done in order to actually check this particular area? I'm sure then on this particular question of management, you will then be able to say, because even there when we visited UK, you could just see that these people, they say, for you to achieve this, you need this type of management. For us to achieve this particular management, it means our recruitment strategy must focus on 1, 2, 3 in order to have this particular type of management. Now, because the dream without capable management will just also remain a dream, no matter how good it is. No matter how much money you might put into the system, that money is not going to deliver the deliverables. Then almost lastly, Chairperson, this question of our policy, which is very complex on its own because of the history where we come from, Bantustan, police, SAP, police, all these terms that put together. And if and only if you talk of transforming this particular organ, that's why I was worried to say, Chairperson, it would be better if and only if, when we engage in such matters, Civilian Secretariat actually then also give us a guide, because I doubt that the organ can be able to transform itself. I seriously doubt that. And I think I am quite correct, Chairperson, to doubt that, because some of the things that are happening actually prove the point that the organ or the institution cannot be able to transform itself, not unless there are some overarching interventions that are made, both political and also otherwise, in order to ensure that it is actually driven to a particular direction. I'm worried whether is there an attempt to revisit the question of curriculum at police college, informed also by, or followed also by the recruitment strategy, so that we don't get this mismatch that you are going to be told down the line that no, man, we have got police who can't even write a statement and all that. So when criminals are like a are like a bacteria that is infected by a virus, they change from time to time, and they need a very sophisticated form of a police officer. A police officer of the 20th century will never be like when, for example, we're fighting the struggle for liberation, whereby just a policeman, now, you need a very sophisticated type of a police officer today who will be able to actually navigate the path and be a step ahead or three times steps ahead of the criminal formations, because we're dealing with very powerful forces here. Some of them are commanding money that by far exceeds even the budgets of governments. Now then, to have just a police officer who can't even read or write, then thinking that, in fact, that police officer will end up being in the employ of those syndicates. Now, that is why then I'm worried about this thing to say, Chairperson, if the commissioner can actually outline this or help me in these few areas, I'm not going to put, I had listed other things, but I think they are unnecessary. I'll leave it like that for a while for now, because maybe I can just conclude to say, General, to me, you know, I'll talk now as a person who also understands the psyche of the environment of the armed forces. Unhappy people or unhappy members of the force can never be expected to deliver anything, because they are always having problems. Some of them are social problems, some of them are work-related problems that are unresolved. And it is in that particular context I was even wondering, I think, Chairperson, when we come to this thing of harassment and all that, we'll be able to talk to these things very critically and be very frank and open. Because some of the things really, they actually, to me, they are quite bizarre. They are quite bizarre, really. And even only if we can have police officers who are like prisoners in the service, yet we expect them to deliver the deliverables, I think that will be a pipe dream, really. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Shlungu. Honorable Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. Just 2 points from my side. I'll keep it brief. The first is a comment. I think the most probably useful information was in the first couple of slides, because much of the content in the later slides spoke to strategies and things that are either in process or are yet to be reviewed and developed. So that's not something tangible one can necessarily engage with. But a big concern I had was a seeming over-reliance within the strategy on blitz operations. And it's, in particular, it's operations at the expense of, you know, the SAPS management talks about going back to basics. But I'm not seeing enough of a strong thrust around fixing the fundamentals. And the fundamentals really come down to three areas. It's the four U's of under-resourcing, under-staffing, under-equipping, and under-training at station level, in particular at station level, because we have bloating at other levels. The second would be obviously fixing crime intelligence, which has been in crisis for a long time, and lastly boosting detectives in distress, as I like to call them. Now, I was glad to see that Major General Rabi spoke about the need for conventional policing to sustain the gains from operations once those pulled back. But that sustaining of the gains of operations is not going to happen if we have station shifts that are understaffed. And you have, and I'm not even talking night shifts here. I'm talking daytime shifts where members of the public walk into a police station and the CSC is completely empty, not a soul to be seen. When you have vehicle issues that Honorable Imam Sheikh touched on, where, you know, certainly a shortage of vehicles, where, as my one oversight in the Eastern Cape showed over December, because of the growth of populations and the redrawing of precincts and sector boundaries, you end up with one vehicle, if you're lucky, having to cover either a very, very large sector with lots and lots of residents, or at worst, a patrol vehicle having to cover two sectors, which is just utterly impossible. Never mind having to then also respond to multiple call-outs for crime scenes or for incidents. And then the detective issue as well, also raised in that environment where many investigators have caseloads of 100, 150 plus dockets. And then on top of that, a complaint I've received from more than a handful of station commanders is that they just don't feel they have adequate support from crime intelligence to inform their operations in countering the syndicates that operate in their areas. So unless that foundational stuff is primary and sorted out quickly, everything else is going to be a flash in the pan at best. And I'm afraid that's what I'm not seeing coming through strongly or clearly enough. Maybe it might just be a matter of how it's framed and worded and presented. But until I just get the sense that every, you know, Board of Commissioners meeting, every National Management Forum meeting, every station and cluster crime combating forum, the alpha and the omega of all those meetings is 4Us, crime intelligence, detectives in distress, then I just feel that we're really sort of climbing up the wrong ladder, and therefore going to end up, or rather, we have the ladder on the wrong wall, and we're climbing up in the wrong direction. And just to end off that point, and maybe the National Commissioner and the colleagues can assist if I'm on the right track. Do tell me if I'm wrong. But it always occurred to me that the ideal scenario for policing is what you might call an 80-20 model, one where 80% of the policing and crime and public safety issues can be addressed adequately by conventional policing. So just police stations doing their sector patrolling, community policing, detectives collecting statements and following up on leads from informants, that sort of thing. That should cover 80% of the terrain. And then it's only the 20% of the really acute issues, the ones that station or cluster level can't quite get a grip on, that you then need these kind of operations that we tout so much. But right now, it seems what's happening is that we rely on the operations to cover the shortfalls in the conventional policing, and therefore we're just kind of stuck in this loop of, plugging leaks, applying band-aids, and not addressing the underlying issues, and hence violence and organized crime is up and up and up over at least the last 5 years. So linked to that, Chair, as my second point and my very short pointed question, I saw the bullet points in the presentation that crime information officer capability has been fully established at all police stations. I'm not sure if that was stated as an intention or as a status report as of today, 14 February, 4 p.m., but if that's the case, if CIO capability at station level is fully established across all, what's the figure, 1,144 stations? I forget the number, I'm sorry. If that's the case, then my question is, but are the vacancies for crime intelligence analysts filled? That issue was raised at a previous committee hearing, that there were major vacancies around the actual analysts who have to process and turn the raw crime information into usable, actionable crime intelligence. And if we haven't addressed that issue, those vacancies, then we've got a weak link in the chain, and that's where things are going to bottleneck, and we're not going to be able to really manage getting a grip on organized crime. So, quite simply, cluster-level crime intelligence analyst vacancies, are those filled? If so, how far? What's left to do? What are the time frames we're looking at? And then I just realized on that aspect, given that environment, I might have missed it, but I'm not sure if the acting DIVCOM for crime intelligence is here. Can I just check if that's the case? And if so, can we just find out where he is and why he's not here? Because, I mean, Chair, every committee meeting that deals with crime fighting, crime intelligence is central to that discussion. So they must be here to answer queries and to give inputs. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Ramatlakane.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair, and of course the presentation. Just a quick one, so maybe specific. Maybe let me start here. I think that the presentation, of course, confirms that some of the issue and items are continuing. It's not necessarily the new ones. It's no new one. We continue to stabilizing. For an example, if you talk about community policing and stuff like that, they're all continuation processes. It's nothing new, it's not new stuff. It's basically saying we are reviewing, we are implementing. But I'm just worried about the prolonged process of reviewal and less implementation. That's for me quite worried, because at least these models have been in the making and in the implementation for a longer period now. It's not nothing new. But let me go to the, in fact, if you look at the drug master plan, the integrated approach, all that is stuff that has been around. The issue is whether there's implementation, whether all role players are playing their role, lead agency, and so on. I mean, the issue of gangsterism, strategy, all of that is what is on the shelf that has been agreed. The issue is going to be whether there's a capacity to implement those strategies, whether all the provinces are geared up for the challenge to implement in terms of their own abilities, whether all the necessary support in terms of the basically neutralizing lead, intelligence lead, those kind of things. That brings me to this question that I've always been raising. Now, Commissioner Stolle, you were sitting on the bit and the outside of the center. Now you're sitting at the center of things. We're talking about gangsterism. We're talking about Western Cape as a priority area. I asked the question: do we walk the talk? What you are saying at the national is that what is happening at the provincial level? My sense is that we're not walking the talk. You want it to be like that, and it's a good thing to take that. But have you actually taken time to evaluate whether the provincial body is walking the talk with you? I mean, the old project that you know, that has always been a cry and a discussion, the IMPI project is part of the gangsters and the smuggling of firearm police being involved in that. In the Western Cape, there's been a long struggle to actually implement that project, because they, in fact, not even struggled, dismantled. The management went so far as actually disintegrating the people who have been driving that project, sending them to station, saying you will open up the new, call all the files up to the center. And then we kept asking, but what is the interest of dismantling the working team that is already, in fact, a secure conviction? So what I'm saying, General, I'm saying to you, let's be practical. We had a long discussion with the previous acting about this. He kept promising that we will come back to you. We are going to be able to resuscitate this project. At that point, the NPA was walking away from the project, saying that if it takes a year for police to confirm whether this project is on the is continuing or not continuing, we are walking away. So integrated investigations falling apart, and who's the blame? The lead agency, and who's that lead agency? The police. So I'm saying, perhaps that you are now at the center of where things happen. We will see walking the talk, because I'm still interested to know how far is that project. And I mean, there was some intervention at some point. There has to be a discussion whether this project is now going to be driven by hawks, no longer the SEPs, because SEPs management was not comfortable with it. When that's, and there are a whole lot of issues around that, including complicity of management. Complicity in a sense that those who wear a lot of stars on their shoulder are interacting and interfering with the investigation of gang leaders. So I ask this issue, General, I don't know, in a handover process, whether that has happened. So if I'm to be convinced, how do we convince that it's not just simply talks, it produces results, including arresting those with the stars? I did mention to the previous General Mutiba the allegations specifically dealing with the general in the Western Cape. I don't take joy in raising these issues, particularly the issues of the police. But, you know, the people that are affected by gangs and gangsterism, if the police, senior police officers are going to use the power they have to basically frustrating to an extent of destroying others. If you look at the battle, the fight that is happening in the Western Cape, Jeremy Vary on the one side, Jacob on the other side, it stems from that issue. The issue of MP and the basically making endos. And that others also becomes a victim in the process. What has been done about it? So are we walking the talk, or are we just saying things to satisfy us so that the police are at least on message? Maybe let me leave that there, because I think maybe General Stolle, you're now in that position that you'll be able to deal with it. Let me get to the second issue. The second issue for me in terms of the integrated approach, including the issue of intelligence-led processes, and of course there's been some weaknesses in that, there's been some drawback in that in the past, but isn't that past tense? The issue that you've always been raising, that I've been raising all the time, is the capacity and the footprint. I mean, in the Western Cape, we said the whole day yesterday talking about the crime that is taking place in the copper theft in the Western Cape. That's organized crime, in my view. It may not necessarily get, in terms of the criteria, meet the criteria. But for me, it's an organized crime that's got the footprint of internal work of the employee of Metro Rail as well. But Metro Rail is unable to deal with it, but are unable to detect and find the crime. The issue is whether the left hand is able to feed in the right hand. The railway police, I know that's slightly different, but when the crime is committed, it's 5 weeks. It's now going for 6 weeks. The trains can't move because every time they fix the stuff there,
the night comes, the corpus is gone, and everybody knows that crime is committed on that line. It's got to do with the organized crime and corpus. But I asked yesterday, do you get the information from the police about this? Because this seems clearly a matter that's supposed to be backed up by intelligence operations or intelligence-led operation. Not much is happening. So I ask, in general, is it correct that thousands of people in the central line, particularly Khayelitsha Philippi area, are simply unable to move? Some of them have lost job because the train are unable to move because of the crime that is committed on the line, and that's an organized crime. And nothing can be done by nobody. So I ask the question, isn't it a question in terms of whether the in the program that we are talking about, including this integrated approach, because there is no other body except the police in this country that's got the mandate. The guards that work for Metro Rail is simply just guards with less powers to do anything. Is there nothing else that can be done around that particular question? So I'm bringing this because it's an organized crime. It's an issue about intelligence-led. And that intelligence-led is somehow found wanting in the big scheme of things. The data, I think my ordinary members have already spoken to it. But what worries me, General, is what you say, the contract expired. I don't know what that means. If it was a contract expired, whether it's a human issue or basically the people that were given the contract no longer have interested in making business with the police. I don't know what it means. As a result, floodgates opens. Hacking happens. It's a fairly serious issue to be disclosed in terms of that. What is the backup? You may not want to talk about it here because I think it may not be good for you to talk about it here, but can there be a reassurance at least around what has been done to neutralize more damage around it? Because if you don't say that, and you say that the underworld is more equipped and they're able to access that, then they scuttle all the serious investigation that is underway. Those are, for me, the three concerns that I want to place, and I'm aware that you may not have all the answers, but I'm keen to know what actually has been done around that particular question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. Honourable Kulaban, very short, I allowed members a long time. I gave them 10, 12, 15, 16 minutes, but it's fine. We'll take the 1 minute and we'll get the responses and then we'll go to the second round of presentations. General Sitoli, let's get Honourable Kulaban.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just two follow-ups. I promise I will be short, not like people who promise they'll be short and take half an hour. I did ask about 2 weeks ago about Morris KGB Shabalala and the claim. I know he was fired. You had proof he'd been fired. But the question was, had he been paid subsequently and you were going to check the system? So, you know, the word out on the street is, he went to jail, he was paid, he came out, he was still paid, he went into the SAPS and was only just recently arrested by the IPED. The second question, you gave details of where and who of the 1,448 criminals in the SAPS had gone, retired, left, but there were a number of them still in the SAPS. You were going to give us details of what crimes they'd committed and what positions they held. When will that be ready? Thank you.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Let's go to General Sitoli. Thank you, General.
Yeah, thanks very much, honourable chair, and to honourable members for the questions. The approach we going to adopt is that we will answer all the questions together, and I will get indications as we follow them as per the order. The first question, we're going to afford General Ngwenya to talk to it, the lifestyle audit.
Thank you, General. Honorable Chair, honorable members, a very good afternoon and happy Valentine. The alleged involvement of members of the SAPS in criminal acts is a sign of decay in ethics. As the SAPS, we have already started responding to the instruction from the DPSA, where we are required to establish an integrity unit. And subsequently, having established the integrity unit, we appointed ethics officers. We also in the process of appointing the ethics committee. We are done with the terms of reference for the ethics committee. But also further, we have finalized the draft ethics and anti-corruption strategy. As I speak now, it is under circulation. We signed off yesterday. It is under circulation for inputs from members of the SAPS in all business units. And once we received the inputs, I will then take it to the policy committee and subsequently to the national commissioner, where it will be signed off and adopted as the strategy of the organization. Of importance is that the strategy makes provision for random lifestyle audit towards members of the SAPS. And also further, we have decided with the Hawks that we are going to be collaborating, because also within the Hawks, there is a unit that deals with the integrity. And also, having spoken about the issue of the ethics committee, it is intended to look at issues of the financial disclosure and conflict of interest. But further, the strategy makes provision for five pillars: the role of the leadership, prevention, investigation, etc., etc. We are optimistic that through the strategy, once we implement, we will begin to see a change within the organization.
But General, you're actually saying there's no lifestyle audits currently underway. Can we get clarification on that? Because it's about proactive management. For instance, we quoted the number of high-ranking officers that's been sentenced in court. I mean, in various stations we visited, we hear of lifestyles that is not appropriate to income levels. If you've got a proactive anti-corruption strategy, you will ensure in the, especially the sensitive areas, like people who run the secret accounts, so on and so on, you will ensure that there is lifestyle audits. The question is there currently lifestyle audits underway in SAPS?
If I can also ask, with this policy, will it be acceptable to the SAPS if civilians had to report? I mean, there must be some way to do it, I presume. But if a civilian in the Free State sees a constable driving a Lamborghini, he needs to tell someone. And actually, if you tell the local police, they'll just cover for him because that's what they do. So there needs to be a place, and I'm hoping you have a number and a whatever to report.
General Nguyenia?
Can we have just a saying that says it will start, say, this month? Mm. Or, yeah, can we have something like that? Because this of keep on telling this will be happening. The damage is going on outside there. Thank you.
General, yes.
Yeah, the chair, she will continue to answer the other questions. I just wanted to clear the lifestyle audit project. I have personally instructed it immediately after our appearance to the portfolio committee. And that particular lifestyle audit project is running from CI. Then,
so we can presume it's underway.
Yes, it's intended to start not later than 1st April. It's underway.
But you see, General, we need that to be expedited. You know, I don't want to go into the history of the previous commissioners and high-ranking officials, but it erodes the credibility of SAPS. And unless there is a clear, stringent measure so that the public can know that my provincial commissioner or my divisional commissioner or my station commissioner has been scrutinized, if there's any questions, there is a process, the declarations, we spoke about that, we will create another opportunity later this term, but there should be action, because the dilemma is it's policy development, this renewal strategy, but there's no lifestyle audits. I mean, you've got huge risk in your organization. And, yeah, let's leave it there, but there's huge risk at every level. And unless there's a concerted effort, we're not going to have confidence. We're not going to have confidence because people who sat at this table a few years ago, you know, it's big problems. So unless we've got certainty that your top management level, your provincial commissioners and people in sensitive positions are cleared, it's going to be very difficult to move forward.
By the first quarter, Chair, we'll give you a progress report based on action taken. And the second one, there's also a special vetting process that complements the lifestyle audit because the two need to be working together. Thirdly, we've also forged relations between DPCI and Crime Detection, General Zumane and General Mataga. They are also looking at dedicated investigation task teams because the moment we pick up these tendencies, then we need to flush out the affected people. General Ngwenya can respond to the other questions.
Thank you, General. As rightly indicated by the General, we have forged relations with the DPCI. Where a member is a subject of investigation, nothing stops the DPCI from doing the lifestyle audit. On the issue of whether, whenever there are whistleblowers, will they be welcome to indicate that there is this member that is driving, a constable that is driving these expensive cars. Within the strategy, there is provision for whistleblowers, but also we indicated that there is a pillar that talks to investigation detection.
The weakness in the system is there's currently no, I mean, DPCI, I know they do the integrity testing, they're effective, but it's also got to do with lifestyles. But, I mean, financial mismanagement, corruption is the biggest threat to the law enforcement agencies. And the dilemma is if it's high-profile officers, it creates a total erosion of that trust. And that should be the priority, Honorable Mulabazi.
Thank you, Chair. And who does the lifestyle audit to DPCI? Because they are also human. Thank you.
Honorable Imam Sheikh.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, the issue of this lifestyle audit that you're not actually conducting has serious repercussions, and let me tell you why. There are case matters where I know that I've had the intervention of the provincial department to deal with certain stations, and there were serious allegations made. Commissioner, that issues have not been dealt with today. And I can assure you that if you're going to do a lifestyle audit on those officers, something has to be untoward about it for them to be living the lifestyle that they are living. Now, there's so many other allegations. The question is, if there's no lifestyle audits, who? Who exactly can you trust and go and tell them this is what is going on there? That is the problem we're sitting with.
General Sitole?
Yeah, thanks very much. I think first, teacher, We just want to acknowledge that we are also taking note how serious does the portfolio committee take this matter. And secondly, all these projects and strategies, I have issued an instruction, nothing starts later than the beginning of the financial year. There's various deadlines. Some of them, the implementation is mid-February. Some of them is mid-March, but nothing goes beyond the financial year. And these lifestyle audits, at the present moment, they are taking place, but on a limited scale. And as per the instruction for the project, we said we focus on all the members. And that's what is kicking off with the beginning of the financial year. It also includes the beefing up of the capacity of CI, so that CI is able to help us. Just a question on who does the lifestyle audit on DPCI. We're also working together, we've got cooperation with SSA. Where necessary, SSA also support us. Thank you.
Another follow-up on Omar Bijat.
I hear General, they're saying that you've already started with this lifestyle audit. What's the criteria that you use to say, now we go for Mabija, it's Mabija, it's so and so? What's the criteria that you are using to determine who to start with, who follow, and so on?
Thank you, Honorable Mabija, General.
Thank you, Chair. I think, firstly, we are informed by intelligence information. It's because the intelligence will always tell you this and this particular person. But secondly, we also use the HR processes, and including the financial health state of the members within the organization. But then again, there's certain crimes. Let me give, for an example, rhino poaching. You would then find that we're busy with a specific crime, but this crime is stubborn, and it shows that there's suspicion of inside involvement. We also screen. We do the screening of all those particular members. If we pick up any case, then we start linking it to lifestyle audit. There's also the OCTA, the Organized Crime Threat Assessment. We also pick up a number of members who are involved in the covert investigations. We also link that to the lifestyle audit. Thank you. Thanks very much, Chair. The question regarding the post-parole strategy, I'll just take it right away. It's not a sub-strategy, it's a multidisciplinary strategy. This particular strategy is supposed to take place within the national, the provincial, and the local crime prevention framework. As subs, we have identified the gap. Our repeat offending is escalating, that is higher and higher. But what we have identified is that correctional services only undertake a 3 month reintegration program. Now you have a criminal that has served 57 years in jail. I'm just giving for an example. A 3 month reintegration program is not enough to reintegrate that criminal back to society. Some of them are actually young people, children. Most of the people, when they come back, they find themselves rejected by society. And then the others, they find themselves in a situation where just on the first day of release, they've got no food to eat, they've got nothing. Then they have to revert either to crime to find something. Now, we are saying at multidisciplinary level, let us come up with a strategy that will address this gap in order to reduce repeat offending. That also include parole, because that is also the parole is. But it's a multidisciplinary strategy that we're proposing. We want to work together with the affected disciplines. The cybercrime strategy, I wanted to be straightforward. Firstly, when I came in, I identified cybercrime as a threat. And I sat with the parties. I discovered that each one of the disciplines, because you've got crime detection, they were working on theirs. CI was working on theirs. And DPCI was working on theirs. I said, no, let's all come under one roof. We want one integrated cybercrime strategy. And I gave the deadline, I think is late February. Yes, it's now in February, the deadline for the integrated one. And my direction was also straightforward. Implementation must kick off at the integrated one by 1st April. I went to engage with the DG for SSA with regard to the integrated cyber center link. We've also agreed we will link our strategy so that we work together. So a formal integrated cybercrime strategy will take off implementation not later than the beginning of the financial year. Thank you.
Meaning we can have a report of the delivery of that program from the 1st of March.
You will definitely have it, but I also just want to be upfront to say it is technology intensive in order for you to provide the response. And the technology part will take you to medium and long term. But the immediate response, we are going to make use of what we have between ourselves, SSA, even the defense will also be assisting us because we want to respond now on what is happening. Thank you. Chair, the illegal firecrackers, I thought General Masemula was going to take the bite first. It was flowing through the festive season.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and members. I didn't get the question well, but however, firecrackers during festive season, what we do is part of one of the pillars during the festive season. Both our visible policing and Metro Police, they do inspections where they find that the storage doesn't conform to standards. They summon the bomb disposal from forensics to do an inspection so that they can correct things. They can give fines, they can confiscate also the firecrackers. And of course, we know they are sold to people over the age of 21. And if one sells to children under age, also again a fine is issued and there is confiscation. But however, what sometimes happens, adult buys, and from there they buy to sell, and then they end up selling to children at the street corners. And there we do confiscate and do searches. Thanks.
I wanted to add.
I'll allow members, but remember I want the other presentations, but you're welcome.
I was saying, in my view, I realized that instead there were more than all those other years in my area. And when I tried to talk to the police that I met, they didn't know what I was talking about. In fact, they didn't even know what was happening to go and look for them, to go and arrest them. They didn't even know what I was talking about. Was this communicated to them? Thanks.
Member?
Chair, I wanted to... But let's accept it as a gap in our implementation of the festive season operation. We will issue instructions and monitor them right from national to provincial so that we make sure that any of our operation responds to this as it was identified as a problem. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, the buildings... just unpacking them, some of them they belong to deceased estates. That was one example in the KZN. What we find in that case is that this building is there for more than 15 years, so no one owns it. And then some of them, they belong to municipality. Some of them, they belong to other departments, but they obviously fall within the public works, that is category. But some of these buildings, they include RDP houses and the abandoned homes by various people. What we did, we have initiated a national project on dealing with these particular buildings, linked to both the outcome of the festive season implementation as well as the Operation Viela is attached to that. So in this national project, we have brought in all the disciplines together, starting from municipality, co-opter, all the relevant and public works. When we find that a building is utilized to promote crime, we firstly arrest those that we find in there. Where we find the children, we talk to social development, they take them, they provide a shelter, but we close down the building. That is first. Then we bring in all the relevant role players. If it's a building that is no longer habitable, we're asking the relevant role player to take that building down. It must be dismantled. That is the one part. if it belongs to government, we say government, the relevant discipline, take charge of the building, get it secured so that the people don't return in and maybe they undertake any exercise with it. If it's hijacked building, we take them for further investigation, we arrest the people concerned, we place it under police custody. When we're done with the investigation, then we dispose it to where it belongs. But maybe just to summarize it, we have formalized a multidisciplinary collaborated approach to dispose of any building that is utilized for crime. This includes the RDP houses. We engage with municipality and COOPTA to say, if this house was actually made available to provide shelter for the community, and it's rented either to a foreigner who's using it for other business or drugs, we are then saying let the bylaws apply or let it be taken back by government, but we will not allow it to proceed to be utilized for crime. I think that is our stance, and this is what this project is about. Rural safety strategy, maybe it's a use of wrong words and expressions. It's a review. The rural safety strategy is there and then is under implementation. And we wanted to review the approach. This is currently also linked to the question where farmers are not given sufficient protection, they are exposed and they complain. But I wanted to use an example that I applied in the Free State. I think the farmers took the president to court in the Free State, and we handled that matter. As a provincial commissioner, I approached them. I went to them, and I said, let us sit down. Let us address these problems that we have identified, and let me bring capacity and everything. I think we worked together. By the time I left Free State, I was given a certificate. It's still on my wall. Van Erechaste or something, because by the time I left Free State, I was commended by all the farmers, and the gross domestic product in the Free State actually rose. So I am planning now together with the ministry to get to them, and I will be there, because I've already gone to several stakeholders and sections of the community that are complaining. But once I'm there and we start a process of addressing their problems, then I'll update the portfolio committee. I cannot respond to this particular challenge unless I get to them. Thank you. The drug master plans, we just want to maintain a very high level of honesty to say we do have the national drug master plan. The minister has called for the review of the National Crime Prevention Strategy, because the drug master plan, the national one, is hanging in the National Crime Prevention Framework, because it's a multidisciplinary type of a strategy. Not SAPS can implement alone. None of the other departments can implement it alone. The same applies if it cascades down to the province. Then there's a provincial drug master plan with the provincial government. It also links down to SAPS. I just want to indicate where we have a challenge. We're working on it. It's on the local drug action plans. If a municipality doesn't have a community safety plan, then you can't have a local drug action plan, because it cannot be supported. It cannot also be resourced because it's within municipality. But within SARS, we've got all the stream where we're issuing instructions, but at the same time, we're also improving it on the side of SARS. We are now as the service engaging all the disciplines, and with the review of the National Crime Prevention Strategy, we're getting back to community safety plans, and we operationalizing the local crime prevention, the local policing framework, so that we all provide a joint response on the drugs. But we're also then addressing it through the unconventional policing method, following the 80-20 principle as proposed by one of the honorable members. The issue relating to Brigadier Pet, I wanted to give General Zumane the first opportunity.
General Sitole, General. Chairperson, good afternoon, and honorable members. immediately after my appointment, Chairperson, the National Commissioner gave me instruction to deal with the issue of Petli, because it has been all over the media, and it did not really augur well for that particular component or division to be always being in the newspapers, because it dent our image as an institution. There were some cases or departmental processes that were undertaken. At some stage, they stalled because some other senior people were also involved. What we then did, we had to appoint your lieutenant general to investigate, because some of the other people were involved, not only Pesha. So it in fact, affected people down the line. So we had to do that. But Pesha was also, in the meantime, as per the portfolio committee's concern, that the certain things that happened, one, the trip to France was stopped immediately. I was briefed. And secondly, the suspension letter in terms of our regulations was issued to her. And she was given, in terms of the regulation, a time to respond to the acting divisional commissioner, the line function manager. And then she responded and then stated other facts that made us also to realize that it was not only herself that was involved, hence the appointment of the lieutenant general that is supposed to be dealing with that. At a moment, immediately thereafter, Chairperson, she took leave. She was supposed to be back, it's either today or yesterday, I'll have to check. But that issue, the National Commissioner gave me the responsibility to deal with it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, just to be straightforward, Chair, the letter of suspension has been issued. And the Northwest investigation, I think what I would like to explain here is that when I came in here as a national commissioner, I found that there's two investigations. There was an investigation against General Patlane, but there was also an investigation against IPIT, which was led by the Northwest investigation team. The case of General Patlane has been disposed of. I think it has been witnessed in the media. But the docket in respect of the Northwest, that is investigation team, is with the prosecution. And as I came in, it was already with the prosecution, because it's a prosecutorial driven type of an investigation. So as soon as the prosecution has disposed of the case, it will come back to the police and then it will be taken for further action. So at the present moment, that is the status of the matter. The vetting plan, I have firstly engaged with General Ngwenya for HR, from HR, to say let us review our HR policies so that they directly talk to vetting. And the first one is the recruitment policy. The recruitment policy, I've instructed that let it actually speak to vetting. But then, further to that, we have decided to attend to the vetting capacity within CI. Because at the present moment, the vetting capacity within CI is not enough to cater for the 195,000 that is strength of the organization. So there's a process that is looking at the urgent review of the resource, that is capacity for vetting. But at the same time, HR is continuing with the review of HR policies. This process will obviously end up at the SSSPC, because when we start enforcing the vetting laws through the HR policies, then we'll have to consult with them. But it's a subject that we're handling with urgency, because we're already experiencing a challenge as the service. The challenges that are beyond the police control, maybe let me first acknowledge to say, as the police service, we cannot fight crime alone, and we are unable. And as a result of these challenges, we have called the minister for the review of the National Crime Prevention Strategy, because for us to engage with other departments, other civil society organizations, the provision is made within the National Crime Prevention Strategy through the development of the formalization of a National Crime Prevention Framework, the Provincial Crime Prevention Framework, and the Local Crime Prevention Frameworks. But from SAPS, we've already started engaging with specific disciplines that are relevant. Like, for instance, education, we are actually engaging them on the campus safety policy, because I think government came up with a school safety policy, but the campus safety policy was a gap, and we want to escalate that to a campus safety summit, and so that we come up with a framework that addresses campus safety. And it's one of those particular examples, but the review of the National Crime Prevention Strategy is going to be providing a holistic solution. The ports of entry, I can give General Massimo the opportunity for the first bite.
You're welcome. Just if we can keep
it. You were talking about the issue of that education. Commissioner, I have a problem specifically in some of the areas. There's a whole great percentage of kids that have not gone to school or don't go to school at all. Now, previously, as far as I know, that if SAPS saw these kids during school hours not at school, they would deal with it. Now, this is aggravated by the fact that the parents want to do nothing about it, but they are getting social grants, so there's a gap for the social development. Now, how do we deal with that, or would you consider addressing that? Because it's a serious problem in some of these areas. Thank you.
General?
Thank you, Chair. To address that one, I actually personally wrote a youth crime prevention concept in the organization. And it's the one that we actually won an international award with the United Nations organization. Part and parcel of getting a response to remove kids out of reach of criminals and to clear them from crime, we are formalizing the National Youth Crime Prevention Framework. And a summit for it was actually scheduled for the second week of February. Is led by the Deputy Minister in the Ministry. So I think it has been postponed too much, shifted too much. And it is from that particular youth crime prevention strategy that we are addressing youth that are both at school, out of school, including the homeless. Yes, and it's a framework that is will be flowing throughout the country. Thank you, Chair. Chair, the Port of Entry, General Masamula will take the first bite.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. With the searching at the port of entries, at the main airports, your international airports, we scan luggages. But at some of the port of entries, we use what we call profiling, and we search based on the profiling, because we do not have your container scanners. In Durban Harbour, we have there is a truck scanner that scans the containers, but the other ports we do not have container scanners. We have limited capacity in terms of docks for searching for drugs, but I do not have. We are busy purchasing a number of docks currently. I don't have the figures now as to how far we are moving in terms of getting more docks for the searching at the port of entry. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I think I have also further instructed a process that is led by management intervention on the stabilization and normalization of borders. The first border that is on the agenda, I think it's the Mhlabolingana that is border. We have also identified, I think it's Libombo. It's also one of the borders that also require that is stabilization. So that process is running to get those borders fully normal, that is normalized. Then also the dry ports include Oar Tambo is also first on the normalization. Chair, I would then proceed the clamping down of foreigners. Maybe firstly, I can start by calling for support from the Portfolio Committee on the issue of foreigners. And I would start with a discovery that I found in the Eastern Cape. There's a Somali village. Yes, a fully-fledged village of Somalians. Now, the first question is, anyway, we don't ask questions as the police. The first challenge is which laws allow the village, yes, to be there. Secondly, we went there as an operation. I think there's more than almost 30 businesses. All of them, they're running business with one paper. The paper is written, work and study. But we closed down all those businesses there, and then we arrested people, we took their papers. But we just want the legal framework to support us, the bylaws to support us, because that village automatically increased the population in that station precinct. And then it means the profile of that station get inflated, and suddenly policing doesn't take place. If we come here, we get blamed for operational policing. But if we did not have the opportunity to upgrade the resources of a police station to attend to an increased population, then we're forced to fire extinguishing. And the only way we can fire extinguish is by means of operations. So we just also need support, because we want to shift from operational policing to basic policing. Hence the stabilization and normalization. And through normalization, we want sustained basic policing. But we are working together with all the disciplines, municipalities, home affairs, and I must say we have received their support. When we were there, we were together with home affairs and everyone. But we then want to address the root cause. Yes, and if we can get support there, we will appreciate it. The scrapyards, I think, firstly, we are taking note. Secondly, we are linking the scrapyard to the legislation that talks to second-hand that is dealing. We are strengthening it. We're linking it to the operations. And then further to that, we're also engaging traffic and metros. In actual fact, on Friday, I'm going to be presenting the turnaround to the metros, and they have been invited there so that we tighten the registration of the vehicles. Thirdly, we are also dealing with scrap yards and things that are actually available, crime committed through the scrap yards to the OCTA, which is your unconventional policing, because we're following up on the market so that we can then clamp it down. The state vehicle abuse, I think firstly, maybe I should also share what I did in the Free State. If any member of the service was abusing a state vehicle, the community was phoning me directly. As a provincial, we mobilized the community, and we said to the community, these vehicles are yours. Report if they are utilized for any other thing. So maybe that call I can also make it, starting even with the members of the portfolio committee, to say we must take action when those vehicles are not available. That is for the community, but within. We are also strengthening command and control, and amongst others, we have instructed our managers with the optimal use of technology to optimize AVL so that we tighten, that is, the control. We are going to extend it again with the formal operationalization of the community policing strategy so that we get the community to help us, and we promise to take action in case these vehicles are not made available for to service the communities.
It sounds wonderful, General,
yes.
And I love that idea, but I'm sitting right now with the case of a police officer who takes his vehicle and parks at the casino all day, gambling, and the vehicle is there, and I'm getting report after report after report, and the station, oh, we'll deal with it. And they say, don't do that again. And he's there the next day. And they say, don't do it again. So where do you go? It's not a kind of criminal activity. You can't go to the IPED. So who do I report this to? Am I, again, sending my 900th email to the head of HR? She sorts everything out. But is that an issue that would go there? Where would it go? Who do I report it to?
Yes, I'm afraid we must just start, because I'm going to start with my other
okay.
presentations.
No.
Thank you, Chair. It's just that I know Commissioner tried to do a good job there, but he didn't. you did address the issue of the scrapyards. Now, what I'm saying is what I know. There's a major problem in the licensing departments. Licensing departments, scrapyards, and roadworthy centers are working in cahoots. Now, that's why I want to know, what are you going to do to clamp down on that? Because these guys steal the vehicle, they go and get the roadworthy, everything done, go to the licensing department, new books are prepared, new registration certificate, and that's what happens. So unless you deal with that holistically, you're going to still have a great challenge.
Tony, you can go ahead. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair, I wanted to start with the one, the case of the vehicle. Now that I'm here, I can no longer refer you to a station command or to any lower level. Can I take the case? And it can be given to General Vuma, and we'll address it. Further, I actually didn't necessarily want to tell the Honorable Member the details how I was going to deal with that process, because it requires unconventional policing approach. Can I simply say we're going to apply the unconventional policing approach, because that is the approach that connects a value chain onto a crime that is taking place? And can I request, I think General Zumane will take the details, and then so that we roll the process up. Thank you very much, Chair. The relationship between police, NPA, and justice, can I repeat again to say it's good? The difference is the conflict of priorities and the conflict of measurement. The way they measure their performance, it's contrary to how we measure. Like, for instance, if we effect more arrests, to us is a performance. To them, sometimes they have to defend the control, and vice versa. So here we wanted to deal with the root cause, which is the alignment of the performance, that is measurement process. If we adopt that particular process, then I think we'll be able to resolve this. And I also have a fusion center concept within, that is the turnaround, that talks to the multidisciplinary performance management systems. Because when we work together, we cannot continue to be measured by our own performance management systems. Because the current performance management system, they don't talk to multidisciplinary collaboration. If you put an integrated plan, you cannot force me to fulfill those priorities by means of a performance management system. And our proposal within the Fusion Center concept is to design a multidisciplinary performance management system that will apply to any integrated plan, any integrated project, so that it gets binding to all of us. One of the simplest exercises that we need to be doing there is that once we've got a plan that is critical, we must be able to link that to the performance agreements of the respective, that is, disciplines that are there. So that's how we want to come up with a holistic, that is, a solution. The integration of recruitment process to school curriculums, we take note and we agree with it, but we will need to follow a process. And I think it will pay off in the near future. We considering the input, and we appreciate it. The alignment of the vision with the budgetary process, I'm a little bit fortunate because I worked in support and operations in the organization, and I spent 13 years in the financial environment. So I don't start any plan that is not aligned to the budget. And the approach that we are adopting with the turnaround is the zero-based budgeting approach, so that it talks exactly to all the issues that are there. There will be a budget concept that will be flowing from the turnaround. And the intention is to get the turnaround fully aligned. And I've already issued a directive that I will no longer receive a performance report that doesn't talk to the expenditure based on the cost of achieving the priorities. And that's where we're moving to for the future. The readiness of the management, I think it's a developmental process. We're all starting with a turnaround. The first priority that we're addressing is the development of strategic capacity within the organization, because from the frontline team, we need to craft the strategic direction of the organization. So therefore, that's where we capacitate. But then we also following up with the leadership levels and layers that are there. And that is why I'm also then, through the turnaround, going down up to the lowest level. I'm also preparing even the members on the ground to understand what this particular vision means at grassroots level, and what is the role of the manager. So it's a work in progress, and it's a process. Then there was also mentioned linked to the cyberspace and other countries. I think within the turnaround vision, we also have the best practice system that we are formalizing for the organization. And in terms of the best practice system, then there's provision for benchmarking with other countries on a number of aspects, so that we do not drop below the international world and standard. Then transformation in subs, yes, we will not transform ourselves. Within the ministry, there's what we call institutional transformation section. And that is actually the one that monitors and makes sure that subs execute. In transformation, we execute. We are also monitored, then we account. So hence the review of the transformation and coming up with a transformation that is in SAPS is for that transformation plan to respond to the call, maybe starting with the portfolio committee, the ministry, and of course to the communities, because they want to see a transform that is approaching. The curriculum review, there's continuous curriculum research we within the organization, starting from that is the college. There's also a number of things that we want to consider ourselves. Like, for instance, I've just been saying to the top management that maybe in the near future, we must consider bringing into the basic policing training curriculum computer literacy. Because when these members go out and work, some of them, they encounter now the cyber issues and quite a lot of this. Then we want that to be developmental as part and parcel of the organization. But we also then consider the inputs. Then the reliance on operations. I might have addressed this point to a certain extent. I just want to say we're sitting with stations with inflated profiles. And the top 30 stations, they're not necessarily hotspots. They are stations with a profile that has outgrown the policing capacity in that particular area. And the first example I want to give you, Haneju is a city within another city. The other city is not in the profile. Then you have Midrand Police Station Altre that is servicing Africa Mall or the Mall of Africa. That mall is not necessarily part of the profile in terms of adjusting the resources. But the processes that we've put in place, we've proposed an integrated research approach at multidisciplinary level. We've spoken to Consumer Good Council, all the partnerships and all other agencies, including municipalities, where we then said, if there's any plan for development that is going to be undertaken, police must be part of the initial work study, and we've got our work study officers who will then be involved. Hence the proposal in the Fusion Center for an integrated work study. But then again, from within, I personally issued instructions that all managers, starting from stations, cluster, even the provinces, we need to continuously monitor and update the profiles of the police stations. And then those particular profiles, as they grow, then they must influence work study investigations at those particular police stations. Our first starting point is to add a contact point within sector policing so that we create access. Then your work study, if there's changes, it will graduate to a satellite. if then there's further changes in the profile, then it will amount to either a second police station, even up to a third police station. So that's what we are following at the present moment. And then fixing CI, the first step of fixing CI is to get a divisional commissioner. And I'm sure the committee has witnessed, eventually we managed to create a post of CI, and it's in the advert. And the advert is closing the 19th. Then after the 19th, we'll start a process of getting a new divisional commission. We will not be able to do anything unless we get a leader there. That is our first starting point of fixing CI. Then the CI turnaround, then it's going to be flowing through that particular process. Then, obviously, there's back to basics within CI. And it also includes the CIOs. I think the CIOs have issued an instruction to say, by the end of March, the stations must be having CIO. So we are it's a restoration of the CIO function at police station, because at one stage it was withdrawn. But by the beginning of the financial year, Chair, not all stations will have them, because we will not have the capacity throughout the country. But I've given CI a homework to develop others so that it becomes a continuous process until we have them all fully. We want to have a CTA process taking place there so that we can run Opta. Then the boosting of the detectives, yes, I think the first thing that killed the detectives was the year of the detectives, because their resources went up and they also then shot up their performance. But when those resources depreciated, unfortunately, the resource plan did not cater for that and sustain. And it's an oversight within the organization. I've been in the session with the detectives. I've given a directive that we review the detective resource management plan, and that is in progress. That includes building up the whole capacity. We buy the 80-20 model. That's what we are trying to move to. But we are not necessarily moving from the 80-20. Maybe we're moving from the 40-40 or 40-60, and we will grow into it. We want to phase out operational policing with basic policing, and that's where policing is moving to. From stabilization, we're going to maintain operational policing only for stabilization, as is indicated there. Beyond stabilization, we get to normalization. But within normalization, we will also involve all the other disciplines, because there's quite a lot of root causes with your normalization. Like, for instance, in the Western Cape, the special development framework is totally not conducive for policing. And if I would give you Nyanga, is a special development dynamic manifested type of a station, and it makes policing completely difficult. So we will be working with municipality, the provincial government, to address those within the normalization that is processed. Beyond the normalization, we restore basic policing and we phase out that is operational policing. The strategies, the reviewer, the purpose is just for execution with the beginning of the financial year. All the strategies that are listed in the turnaround, they are for execution in the beginning of the financial year, and the instructions are clear. And the majority of these strategies were developed by myself when I was in policing. It's just that they could not be implemented, and I know how they should be implemented. I've given the direction. And nothing starts after the financial year. We move on. The gangsterism, I think firstly, the gangsterism is a two-tier process. One, obviously, is start with combating. We do have the capacity for combating, but what we may not be having fully is the prevention part, because it doesn't remain with the police only. We are coordinating, that is, the prevention, because there's quite a lot of root causes that are also contributing towards this. But the current combating plan, combating and prevention plan, is linked to the stabilization and normalization. So we will then be intensifying through the combating side, which will include the support that we'll also get from defense. But beyond that, we want to normalize both Eastern Cape and Western Cape. And then we start with the prevention that is processed. But we'll be calling for the other disciplines to work together with us as we normalize that process. And then walking the talk. Yeah, this walking the talk, let's first accept we did not walk it that much with right. And it's an area of improvement. We've also said to ourselves, and I've made mention of an example to say, if we do not perform ourselves at national, we can't expect the constable to perform at the lowest level. And we have all committed to this, but the specific mention made, like there's a Western Cape project. I've assigned this Western Cape project to General Tsumane, and he's going to be working on it. It is still there, but it might not be up to the level of operational expectation. But then General Tsumane is going to address it, and we'll come up with something different in our next maybe appearance. Then the battles within the Western Cape. Firstly, I was personally in the Western Cape yesterday. I was addressing the top management. One of the concepts that was introduced is the Simunyo concept, and they all bought it. And then some of them, they said it's even a spiritual concept, and that is intended to reunite the province. That is firstly. Then secondly, we informed them. We wanted them to rise above petty differences because we've got crime to deal with, and that is in the province. Then I have commissioned a climate study, an organizational climate study in the Western Cape. I've declared it yesterday. It's going to be undertaken within a very short term. A climate study is just going to give us the exact root causes, and there will be recommendations. Soon there will be, let me not use the word soon, by the beginning of the financial year, there will be an action plan that is responding to the climate study findings. And we will then address, that is Western Cape. I'm about to finish now.
General, you're saying the drought is going to be replaced by rain.
Actually, Chair, something very interesting happened, because immediately after we've addressed Western Cape and I went to the media briefing, when we returned, the rain was falling. Yes, and that was the blessing. Yes, the capacity and footprint, copper cable theft, and all those particular problems. Again, the response is the Octa strategy. I think these are some of the value chain related types of crime, because the cable theft is also linked to various markets. It's also even linked back to your second-hand, that is, dealers. I think General Matagate and General Tsumane, is it today that you were sitting with the... Yes. They've been sitting with all the role players to address the unconventional approach in dealing with these particular subjects that are in the Western Cape. But secondly, we are then going to be strengthening the conventional side on the second-hand dealing. Chair, is not a contract that has expired for technology, is the security controls. Yes, some of our technology was obtained in the year 2000, and then some of the security control expired 2004, 2006, up to 2007. With the review of the technology, we want to restore, that is, security controls. In actual fact, we need to get to a technology that has got new security controls so that we can then be able to protect, that is, our systems. And can I again, Chair, end it there with the permission of the committee, because I'm live and we want to deal with this matter. Thank you. Then the last one, or the second last, is Maurice Shabalala. Can I ask General Ngwenya just to confirm that he was not paid? Oh, thank you.
Thanks, General. Thanks, Honorable Chair. Yes, indeed, the salary was freezed in 2013, the 6th of 10. That's the same month during which he was convicted and sentenced.
Right, thank you very much for that. Other presentations? Members will remember that there's a few issues. We raised the issue of senior appointments, the Section 45 appointments. The Portfolio Committee's got a certain view on that. And then we also requested a literacy audit. I don't know what is the progress with regard to that. And then, of course, the issue that we've also raised regarding the harassment policy. So let's go to those. And then, of course, always the firearms amnesties. But let's first deal with this first three reports and give members an opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think General Gano just give a brief audit of the senior appointments as executed. Thank you.
Thanks, General. Thanks, Honorable Chair. We do have a short presentation. This first slide, Chair, it reflects the appointment of senior managers in the SAPS is regulated in terms of the following, which is the Constitution, the SAPS Act of 1995, SAPS Amendment Act of 2012, Act 10 of 2012, SAPS Employment Regulations of 2017, and the National Instruction 10 of 2017, and the National Instruction 11 of 2017. I will request, Chair, that I do not talk to the specific sections that are talking to this act. Of importance is that the regulations of 2017 makes provision for concurrence with the minister when appointments are effected. The second slide makes visible senior managers who were recently appointed as deputy national commissioners. The first one, Lieutenant General Zumani, was appointed Deputy National Commissioner, Crime Detection, with effect from the 1st of December 2017. He was previously the Provincial Commissioner of the Free State at Lieutenant General level. The second appointment, Major General Vuma to Lieutenant General, she has been appointed as the Deputy National Commissioner, Management Advisory Services, with effect from the 1st of December 2017. The second one, the third one, Major General Mfazi to Lieutenant General, he has been appointed DNC Management Intervention with effect from the 1st February 2018. These appointments were made in terms of Regulation 45-1N of the Department's Employment Regulations of 2017, which provides that the National Commissioner may, upon written motivation and with the concurrence of the Minister, promote an employee into a post without advertising the post and without following the selection process if the National Commissioner is satisfied that the employee qualifies in all respects for the post. Secondly, there are exceptional circumstances that warrant the deviation from the third sub-regulation, and such deviation is in the interest of service. Such promotion also has been recommended by the Minister for outstanding performance. And lastly, the National Commissioner has recorded the reasons for the deviation in writing. Towards the appointment of these members, all this that is required in terms of Section 45-1N has been complied with, Honorable Chair. And then this slide makes visible all members who were appointed in terms of Regulation 45 after the last appearance in 2017, which was in October. The first one, on the 1st of December 2017, it talks to the Lieutenant General already mentioned. And then the second one, 1st December 2017, Warrant Officer to Lieutenant Colonel, that of the Close Protector of the National Commissioner, followed by, still on the 1st of December, Sergeant to Warrant Officer, two times members, close protectors to the National Commissioner. On the same date, constable to sergeant, two times members, close protectors to the National Commissioner. 1st January 2018, colonel to brigadier, executive secretariat within the office of the National Commissioner. I must indicate that this appointment was also in settlement of a grievance. 1st February 2018, Major General to Lieutenant General Deputy National Commissioner, the second Deputy National Commissioner as mentioned in the previous slide. 1st February 2018, Sergeant to Warrant Officer, two members belonging to the Junior Corps of the National Commissioner's Office. 1st February 2018, Public Service Act, Salary Level 5. Five members promoted to the rank of from Level 5 of the Public Service Act to the level of Sergeant. Those are members of the Junior Corps within the Office of the National Commissioner. Continuation. This slide makes visible those vacancies within top management. There are four vacant top management posts at the level of Lieutenant General, that is Provincial Commissioner Free State, Divisional Commissioner Crime Intelligence, Divisional Commissioner Protection and Security Services, Divisional Commissioner Detective Services. These posts were advertised on the 25th January 2018. We envisage to fill them by April-May 2018. There is also one vacancy that exists at the level of top management, Lieutenant General within the DPCI. That post is that of a national head DPCI. It has been advertised. The administration thereof is dealt with within the Civilian Secretariat of Police. Two Lieutenant Generals are currently on suspension. That is the Provincial Commissioner, KwaZulu-Natal, and the Divisional Commissioner, Forensic Services. Both posts remain occupied.
I think let's start with that section. Thank you very much, General Nguyenia. Let's go to the appointments. Now, maybe my question is coming from the philosophy of the National Development Plan. Now, the National Development Plan really emphasizes the issue of merit and specific criteria for the appointment of your national commissioner and senior officers. Of course, we don't have a National Policing Board yet. But, General, I want to ask you, because if I look at the list and the content advisor showed me, from General Stele, he appointed 20 persons in the 1 year in terms of Regulation 45, General Pieja, also a lot, General Batlane, 83 in the 16-17 year. Now, if you go to the upper echelons, to ensure that you've got the right people, and of course, you're the National Commissioner, you must have people around you that you've got confidence and you must deliver in terms of your performance plan, of course. But once again, I just want to get your view. Wouldn't it be better for your DNCs that they must also compete in a process where there is advertisement, there's interviews, there's selection, there's assessment? Wouldn't that be better in the long run? If it works for you, your check-in 45s, it's fine, but wouldn't that be the road to go towards the future? And if we want to implement the NDP, that should be the road. I just want to get your rationale for continuing with the Section 45 process. I understand you must move, you must perform. If you don't got the right people, you're not going to perform. But if we look at the police long term, we need competition for top post. We need that. Otherwise, we're not going to have excellence. I just want to get your views on that. Let's go to the other members. Honorable Imam Sheikh, then Honorable Mbele, Honorable Ramlakane.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, yeah, I think my concern here is this, that, you know, there are various allegations or perceptions, if that's what you want to call them, that, you know, it's a case of who you know the right people in the right places and you get the right jobs. So I think I want to go back to what Chair Honorable Buchman is saying, that if it went through a process of competition, wouldn't that eliminate that perception and those allegations that, you know, those are getting appointed when there might be more qualified or experienced people, because there's a whole lot of that allegations. And things. Thank you.
Honorable Mbele.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not going to repeat too much what you and Honorable Imam Sheikh have outlined, except to say that the background and the precedent to the employment of Section 45 of the SAPS regulations has tended to be one of misuse of that discretionary power in aid of favoritism at best and cronyism at worst, which actually undermined the quality of top management and therefore the leadership and performance of the service. And that's why it really does have to be an exceptional circumstance as stated in the slide here, and absolutely kept to a minimum. But I do see something that might alleviate the committee's anxiety, which states that the National Commissioner does have to record the reasons for those deviations in writing. So I'm wondering, through you, Chair, if fellow members are willing to lend support, if we can then just request copies of those records, so that we can then just peruse what the reasoning and the grounds for those have been. And then if all seems above board, then we can at least say, in this instance, it seems okay, but still very much with the position that it's not the desirable path around appointments, especially in top management. So that certainly would be my proposal. And then my second question is just specifically on the appointments in the table, where I see that a fair number of them, four of them, relate to members who were appointed as close protectors for the National Commissioner. Can I just get some clarity on what that means? And what the background to that is. I don't think it's an issue the committee has ever dealt with directly, actually, as to what the assignments of protection services to the National Commissioner, PMO herself, is. We all know about the VIP protectors for ministers, MECs. But I'm not quite sure how it's meant to work for the National Commissioner. And if this was in compliance with that framework and that protocol. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. We have Honourable Ramalakani, then Honourable Shlongo, and then Honourable Molabatsi. Thank you.
No, Chair, I think much has been covered, but I just want to ask the question. The General speaks about these numbers, but what I want to ask, is it just a matter of, because obviously these are police officers that you have, is it a matter of drawing in the pool for purpose of this particular assignment? In that case, it addresses the issue about the ranking upwards, because this one suggests ranking upwards somehow. Now I'm saying if you have a police officer already in the service and you redeploy them, would they necessitate that they rank upwards? That's the question I'm asking. And General Ngwenya, I'm asking that question, whether is it the rank up or is it a matter of shifting people into a particular post with a different kind of task that are given to them? Because this one to me looks like ranking up. And if it's ranking up, what's the difference between the people that are deployed from within the service to do a particular functions without necessarily? Are you saying, therefore, that the ranking up immediately addresses the kind of reliability and performance, and without ranking up, it militates against that? Number two, you had number of the predecessors, let me put it that way, who I suspect they too had a similar deployment or people working for in terms of the very same protection. Were they upgraded in terms of rank? And if so, why don't they just get redeployed? Or does it has to do with the kind of is it linked to a question of trustworthy or whether they are able to perform? Or is it a matter of saying, if I come in, I look for my own for this particular task? I thought that it should be addressed differently because both of them, all of them are wearing the uniform, they have a particular task. So I'm just not understanding it, what informs it, or is informed by simply saying, I'm going to work tough, I'm 24/7, the previous one was having a church service on the weekend, and people were the kind of laissez-faire attitude, and now I want people that can run. So that at least I understand the rationale. Now, if then, let's say the short-lived position of acting, and they had this, what effect does that have in terms of your budgetary approach? Because surely the ranking up may have not been necessarily budgeted for that ranking up, because the minute rank up, it talks to the perks or it talks to the salary scale. Is it sustainable, given the number of the predecessors? And at least we have some permanency, but permanency that's got a drag along effect, if you like, in terms of the previous predecessors on the same thing, which can go on with the whether it's a generals or lieutenant generals. And so you can start rolling it down. The last one, general. It seems to, if my memory does not necessarily deceive me, or when we had this long discussion about Section 45, acting General Mutiba that was presenting it, the importance of it, and you were in the meeting. But not necessarily at the center, because you had a particular task. Surely you had the committee's view on it, that they were quite against it, for reason that were advanced then. At least you didn't commit to anything because you were not asked to commit. Little did you know that the wheel will turn and you will be the one that sits in the middle. And for heaven's sake, you went back to it. So I just want to understand did you not quite agree with the committee around the Section 45? I thought there was a general agreement, even though the Police Act of 1995 still make that provision for it. And I mean, we all know the condition of Police Act 1995. We all talk about the outdatedness of it. So that's really for me the question, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Shlongo, and then Honourable Molobatsi.
No, Chairperson, without laboring on this point of Regulation 45, because it's a regulation limited to police service, not necessarily just civil service in general, which will be very problematic. Now, I think, is there no way, General, not necessarily to say one is casting aspersions of doubt on appointed individuals, but I think as honorable members are raising, you know, when acting National Commissioner Mkushana came before the committee, appointing that general as an acting head of intelligence, I think he resorted to this very same thing, because he was saying, no, I appointed this man on the basis of personal trust. But there is no yardstick for personal trust.
within 2 weeks or 1 week, that personal trust was evaporated and completely proven wrong. Now, I'm just suggesting, General, that because if it is like that, I can foresee, because those that were there, certainly I believe you get them redeployed elsewhere. Without maybe us having a feel whether amongst them there are good men and women of integrity who were not going to say, I was a servant of Pashane or Mkhushana, but a servant of South African police, to me, which is very, very important. just away from any kind of trust, because that thing, at the end of the day, it would mean to say to me, if I were there doing my work professionally like that and being removed like that, whether I do good, my goodness is not recognized. Anyone, new boss that will be coming in, my future is not guaranteed in what I'm doing. So that particular thing, yet if then this thing is, either this thing is amended and done something for ease of reference. I understand that you were caught also with your, you know, it's a very, very late appointment of a full-time commissioner in the South African Police Service, which is riddled with a number of problems, to be quite honest. Now, but to assist us in this, because I can just imagine if, I don't know if maybe some people, maybe Mkhushana during that time, or that guy, that general maybe appointed his own people somewhere with all that baggage, because he did not go through a particular process. And you will be having rogues within the service, but if it was a collective decision that has got some checks and balances and all that, you will then be able to overcome an individual weakness of an individual. I think maybe if then there can be that thing working towards that. Then lastly, if you go to page 7 downwards, I understand the question of Divisional Commissioner of Forensic Services, because I believe that is about the former acting National Commissioner Pashane. I think he was from there, drawn from that division. And his process is still ongoing in courts. But what about that one of KZN? When we were told in some meetings sometimes back that provincial commissioner won cases and seemingly even the HR division was saying, no, we don't know now how to proceed. Will it be just a lifetime thing that is a suspension for life? With payment and all that, thanks.
Honorable Molobatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. The two promotions of Major General, of Lieutenant General Buma in Fazi, where they promoted solely because they had to be appointed as DNCs, or were there other reasons? Thanks, Chair.
Maybe just one question from my side. The plan with the issue of regional commissioners. Now, the regional commissioner post arose from the post-Bieja era, and there was a reason for appointment people in that position. But I've seen, I think, reports the minister and the national commissioner, if I'm correct, that reported that there will be a new system where regional commissioners, there's a rollout in Gauteng and one other province, where they will now be between clusters and the provincial commissioner. I just want to know what is exactly the plan with regard to that. Aren't we going top heavy? And what is the financial implications? Can we just maybe be clarified on those press reports? Thank you.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. Maybe if I express my view as the chair wanted me to do it, it might respond to quite a number of the questions. I think, firstly, I agree with the view that it's feasible to allow a competition from the level of deputy national commissioners. Therefore, it's one area that requires a process for it to kick off. I think, firstly, the national instructions, they currently limit you to divisional commissioners appointed, that is, in terms of your advert, because when we appoint a divisional commissioner, I form a panel of the deputy national commissioners. Then it means if we have to appoint a deputy national commissioner, then I must resort to a panel over and above that, which I think then I would also need inputs with relation to that, because I've been engaging like the Office of the Minister in terms of the current regulations, where I must sit with three other people who are not do not have police background to assess a post that requires operational policing capacity. In that case, it's going to kill me. How are the three people going to assist me? I think I need someone at least with capacity. But the DNC, then it means we have to opt for a panel over and above the existing, that is, national instructions, and it's possible. So I support the view. Then I think the appointment of the current ones, and I'm not going to individualize, but I'll make example of one case. Exactly at the same example that is made, I was here in the portfolio committee when the portfolio committee indicated they wanted the appointment of the crime detection DNC. I think on several occasions it was already long overdue. But let me also then indicate what complicated the matter further. I think the performance of crime detection has always been a question here. Then the divisional commissioner applied for another post. More or less the same time I've been coming in. Then I found myself in a situation where I'm sitting without a divisional commissioner and a deputy national commissioner, and I needed to change the performance of crime detection immediately. The only shortest route was to opt for the appointment of a deputy national commissioner. So I think I needed to get into that particular place. But also, when I attended the SCOPA, it was my day 6 as a national commission. When I came and answered there, they just started. They said, you know what, national commission, first thing, you must not tell us you are new. Yeah, and you must not tell us anything. You must just sit here and account and give us what we want. Then I needed a functional office to do that. That is to start with. And therefore, I needed to do something so that I get a functional office to generate that. And they promised to fire me there. And at some stage, they told me, you don't know what you are doing. Before I even start doing what they say, I don't know what I was doing. So all I'm just trying to say, these are just some of the pressures we have to balance. And that is it. But I agree with all the honorable members. It's possible to allow this competition, and I will work on it so that I get proposals, and we start at the level of the DNCs. Anyway, at the present moment, I'm not under pressure. That's why I allow the other Lieutenant General post to be placed on advert, because it is the pressure. Then, Chair...
General, just a moment. Honorable Bailey, you just wanted to do a follow-up?
piece. Sorry.
Thank you, Chair. It's just a very quick follow-up to make the comment that I certainly appreciate, and I think the other members do appreciate, that particular acute dilemma that she was faced with around how do you convene a selection panel at DNC level when you don't have access to colleagues above that who have the expertise. But that then illustrates precisely the point why the urgency of the implementation of the NDP recommendation for a national policing board becomes that much more urgent. Because then you have access to that resource and to that mechanism, which will then assist not just with appointment at DNC level, but all top and senior management. So I would hope, and maybe I should ask, if part of your engagements with the minister in seeking supports for going forward, if that has been a point of discussion, because I don't think, Chair, that we should wait for the comprehensive transformation task team process and the overhaul of the SAPS to hold up the ability to implement that element around the National Policing Board going forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. General, you can continue with the other responses. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. The protectors, I think, firstly, when they started protecting the national commissioner or the acting, I was still the Divisional Commissioner for Protection and Security. What I first pointed out was that the National Commissioner was not part of the RIMAS, which is the policy that governs, that is, the protection of dignitaries. And I then made a proposal for the review of the RIMAS so that we get it formalized within the policy framework. Then the RIMAS was referred to Cabinet for review, having added the National Commissioner as part and parcel of the protection. Because beforehand, the National Commissioner was protected on a threat base. Then the RIMAS, though it's there, it's not yet finally signed off by Cabinet. But during my appointment, I was then straightforward. I said I want a formal threat assessment. Otherwise, I should not be protected. Then the formal threat assessment was done. And then there was outcome based on findings and recommendations. So the selection of the protectors was informed by the threat assessment. The ranking upward, maybe my response to this one, it will also be based on when I was in protection and security, I actually initiated a turnaround of the protection and security. And the one of the aspects that are dealt with there is the grading of protectors. Because protectors, they need to be graded at a particular level according to the protector dispensation. And our protectors, that we are using at the present moment, the whole protection and security, they are not graded according to international standards of protection and security. And we were starting that process of grading them. Now, whether it's an upward or it's a horizontal, the important aspect is the grading. And the grading does not only go with the rank, it goes with experience in protection and security. And it also goes according to the capacity of a protector that you need to address the level of the threat as per the threat assessment. So I think this is how this was looked into. And I did not choose protectors. The only one protector is the one who was with me when I was still a divisional commissioner, as a divisional commissioner. The others, they were deployed to me by the protection experts. And I accepted them. Then Section 45, I think I said I agree with the portfolio committee, but I want to confirm that I was present when the view of the portfolio committee was expressed. But I also have a suggestion that whenever there's a regulation, a policy, or a legislation which its outcome doesn't augur well, I think it needs to be reviewed. Yes, and what I'm suggesting is to allow a situation where we sit with a legislation or a regulation, we continue to implement it, but the outcome is not good. My suggestion, maybe we should consider reviewing it. Yes, but I will also advance that, but I've explained my situation. The suspension of the KZN PC. My principal chair has been that we cannot continue to pay senior officers who are sitting at home. Yes, and I called the case of KZN together with the one of General Mdluli. It was a group of them. And I said with legal services and HR, I said I want all of them to be disposed. And then the one of KZN, I gave it an ultimatum for March. So legal services will still need to come to me. But there's a pending court case. Yeah, on this with the court order, which we may not violate. So it's sitting in March. But I've started a process of disposing all senior officers that we're paying sitting at home. And it's not only senior officers, all members, so that we deal with that. The two lieutenant generals, the DNC or just, I'm not sure, but I hope I capture the meaning of the question. But I want to start by saying both of them, they've got the experience that is required to become a DNC. But secondly, the functions which are they rendering became critical functions for the police service for us to continue. I also understand the view which relates to management intervention. But the first day after the appointment of the DNC management intervention, I said with him, I said my approach, I want us to configure the management intervention approach. And the first assignment that I've already given him, I said he must run stabilization and normalization interventions. And we are in a process of reviewing it and realigning it to impact positively on policing. Then it then take me further to the regionalization approach. I think firstly, Chair, this is a process that is still going to go through the SSPC process because it's a matter of mutual interest. But what informs the regionalization approach, it's the migration of resources in the turnaround. We have the migration of resources from the strategic framework of the organization to the local policing framework. Because what has happened before, it's also the way we've been handling structures in the service. My directive has been that if we conduct a work study and we come up with a new structure, before it can be implemented, there must be a resource requirement that is attached to it. Like, for instance, if we need the members that we would need, HR must come confirm to say, yes, there's new members that you're going to get in order to fill the structure. But if you approve of a work study and it says maybe it gives you 50 posts and you did not deal with the resource requirements so that you can upgrade the personnel plan of the organization, then people from the police stations, they apply for this post because they all want vertical mobility. Now, that's how the training process of police stations started in the organization, because people started migrating from police stations upward because they're applying for posts. And now your promotion policy and other policies in the organization, they don't allow you to stop them from moving up. Now we are then saying, let us adopt a reverse approach. Let's migrate the resources back down to, that is, to station level. Hence the regionalization approach. And the regionalization approach is also intended to empower certain stations at local level. Our approach is also taking the authority to the grassroots that is level, which will also then see certain stations in the process maybe rising to that level where we bring the authority back on the ground and so that we fight the criminal there. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, in terms of our other three reports, we're going to take the following process. We take note of the findings with regard to the Northern Cape protectors matter. In terms of the findings, there's indication that it's solved. We received another letter on Tuesday, but let's see if it's solved. Then the second issue with regard to the literacy matter that was raised. I think in terms of the presentation, the study is still outstanding, and I think we need it as soon as possible, because it's also in the interest of SAPS to determine what is exactly the status of your literacy at the station level. So we need the commitment. I presume the National Commission is going to say March. So a lot of things are going to happen in March. March is very... But it's quite critical that we get that as soon as possible. So if we can get the report that is promised, I think there's a comprehensive survey on the table, but, I mean, it would be possible, I presume, in terms of your provincial spread, that you can get a broad figure to the committee in the next 2 weeks. Is that possible? If we can get that commitment? National Commissioner?
Chair, it's possible, because by the time we came to the committee, we actually already started with the exercise. It will just be for us to update, fine-tune the report. So we'll submit it within the next 2 weeks. Thank you.
Very good. Then the last issue, I think, on the agenda is the matter of the firearms amnesty. I think the only issue that really complicated the fact is the dates. So remember, the letter from the Speaker came after the recess in 11 December, so you are actually proposing that we go to the middle of the year. If that is in essence the proposal, and the form and the matter is still the same, we can process it in the Portfolio Committee, but I will allow members, if there's any issues, let's deal with it.
I have an issue with the proposed draft notice by the ministry, by the minister. As you will recall, the chaos that surrounded the last lot, people would arrive at a police station, hand over a firearm, and frequently were just given a piece of paper with something scrawled on it, and off they went. And, of course, the firearm went into the police officer's back pocket, and it was then sold. I mean, you know the case that's in the Western Cape at the moment. 2,000 of them are out there killing our officers. So I see nothing in this letter that says a receipt, official receipt, stamped, signed, sealed, fingerprinted, everything must be given to every single person who hands in a firearm. I think that is a major omission out of this document, because without that and receipts in a book, not just little pieces of paper dished out, I mean, it has to be organized very carefully at every single station. So really we can't have the sort of chaos we had in the last two attempts. That's my input. Thank you.
I think firstly we accept the input by the Honourable Member, and I would like General Masimula and General Masia just to confirm the amnesty part.
Thank you, General Sitole. General?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. We have got a receipt, but the type of format which the Honourable Member is raising is a welcome suggestion. I think we'll go the root of the book. We do have an official receipt with a stamp, but the suggestion of the book is something we'll go forward for. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, General. Honourable Mbele.
Thanks, Chair. Just a quick question. The draft amnesty makes reference to an annexure which accompanies the declaration. I didn't receive that annexure. I'm not sure if perhaps the Secretariat or the SAPS can assist with just so we can have a comprehensive, you know.
I presume it's that the stations, the three exceptions. Yeah, I think, let's get the other questions and then we get SAPS to respond. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Is there adequate processes or facilities made available at these stations to accommodate these? Because, you know, in the past we've had serious challenges of firearms being given there and then ending up into the hands of the criminals as well. But again, you know, Commissioner, it comes back to exactly the same thing. if we don't finalize the other processes of vetting and whatever it is, these exercises sometimes will have limited success because it can go into the wrong hands and then be disposed of. So I just want to thank you.
Any other questions from members with regard to this topic? Right, let's go to General Sitole and his team. Thank you.
Thanks, General Masemula will respond to both questions.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and members. The annexure, well, it probably wasn't attached. It refers to all the type of forms, different forms that takes through the process. We'll make it available if it isn't attached. It's the different forms that get filled in the process. On the question of storage, Honorable Chair and members, yes, we did identify storages at the provincial headquarters. From station, if you remember when you presented the amnesty last year, we made it apparent that the firearm will take a certain route where it's supposed to take a certain number of days before it gets to the provincial storage. So in other words, at the station of origin where it is handed, we do not keep it long. It gets to the provincial storages, which we currently do have. Thanks, Jefferson.
There's a follow-up, Honourable Kalabana.
It's about the three stations that there was a sort of general agreement that Isipingo, Belleville South, and Kanyamazane be excluded. But in the official question that I put through to the SAPs, it says at the end, it is still the ultimate view and wish of the SAPs that the above stations must not be excluded. Now, Isipingo lost 31 firearms, Belleville 18, and Kanyamazane 3, but you're still suggesting or proposing that they should be included in receiving armloads full of firearms handed to them when, in fact, they can't retain their own SAPS firearms. I'm most interested that someone would request that they be included.
Mula?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. That should have been a typo error. We agreed here with the committee that we are going to exclude those three stations. So I will make sure that we write a notice to the respective stations and maybe also publish it so that it is known that they are excluded from the process of receiving. No. Excluded from the process of receiving firearms amnesty. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Remember, members, in terms of the process, remember there's going to be now a new letter from the minister to the speaker. We are going to get a third referral, and then we're going to formally adopt. So that's going to be the process, yes.
I'm most interested that you say an entire paragraph is a typo. Who actually types up and writes up these answers to members of parliament? Because if you're the one in charge, someone has written this up on the orders of someone in the SAPS who says it's a really bad idea to exclude the three stations that lose the most firearms. Let's include them, and it's your wish that you do so. You now are saying actually it's not your wish because the agreement was here in this committee that they be excluded. So someone has answered a parliamentary question with something that is not true, and that is really a really bad thing. I don't know how to stress it enough, but telling an MP something that's untrue is not acceptable in any way, shape, or form.
All right, let's give the National Commission opportunity.
No, thanks, sir. I think we apologize for the error. It will not be repeated. Thank you.
Right, thank you very much, members. Is there any questions on those three reports? I think there's now agreement. We accept the Northern Cape report, that matter has been handled. Then just the issue of harassment. Now, General Vuma indicated that we're going to get a report on that specific case. Maybe just to indicate, and I'll give a copy to the National Commissioner, I received a very concerning letter after our last Portfolio Committee meeting from a station in the Eastern Cape where a General Major is a station commander, and about a process that started in October 2017. And it's a harrowing tale of no assistance. It's maybe not the names for the public record, but it's also another case that I think that police management must look into, And there must be consequent management, because it seems the junior officers are not assisted at all. Station commanders just continue, there's kind of pressures, and there's no discipline. So I think maybe if we can, General Sithole, just get an update on the matter that we referred to at the last portfolio committee from to General Vuma. Is there any action being taken? And then also that new matter also be addressed. Thank you.
Yeah, Chair General Ngwenya will provide.
Thank you very much, General. Honorable Chair, in relation to the request that we were supposed to present on the harassment policy, we had prepared a detailed presentation that informs the committee on what happens immediately cases of sexual harassment has been reported. But also, further, in particular to that specific case that was raised, the case in KwaZulu-Natal, I took it upon my shoulders. I spoke to the complainant herself, I've spoken to the provincial commissioner, and I also indicated that there was a divisional commissioner from headquarters who went there on the 5th of December. And then subsequently we have a factual report that details everything that would have taken place ever since the case was reported. We do have I don't know whether one should take the committee through the factual report, but I also forwarded the copy of the report.
Let's get copies and then we'll peruse and then we'll come back. Yeah.
We will circulate copies through the secretariat. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. We'll also attend to this one. Okay.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner and General Nguyenya, for attending to it. We appreciate it because it's important. Again, there must be a working environment within SAPS that the officers and the members can be happy with. Honourable, yes, Honourable Slongo?
No, thanks, Chair. I understand, Chair, that you were busy in this caucus, you know, based on our dilemma as a country. But there are some complaints that one received that I forwarded, which I wanted to talk to, but not necessarily in their details. Because to me, that thing showed me that particularly this thing of harassment of women within the service is a reality now. It's no longer something that can be covered. It's just because even that one of KZN, just been going on and on and on, and the life of that woman put at a serious risk. At least thanks, General, that you took it upon yourself, because I was worried that, the things, I think I'm privy to the contents of that thing, of harassment by that commanding officer there of that particular helpless woman. If she's not actually then taken care of and made susceptible to all these kinds of threats and fears which preoccupy her mind in a very, very negative way psychologically. So it will be very, 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 very bad. But, Chairperson, I was of a view that, no, really, let us maybe, is it not going to be a useful thing to engage services of or to engage the women, the ministry also of women, and also the component of, and her component of women committee of parliament, so that police members who are women can actually be able to speak out about these things, because most of them, serious harassment with gross violation even of human rights is taking place here. And But because of the nature of these things make these people feel cornered to come out to the open up until these things actually reach a point of no return. But if and only if there can be some kind of consciousness that is inculcated or driven, targeted particularly at our policing, so that even the male partners will also understand that those who are actually then predating on women in the service actually feel that the space is actually closing on them. Because at the moment, as long as they are just, because of the nature of the policy, if you are senior to me, I must keep quiet, you do whatever you want to do to me. I've got... No, I think, Jefferson, really, let's take this thing head on, because it is said to be very rife, and those reports, if you read them, one of those reports, that woman from Gauteng, it tells you that this thing is very dangerous. When a person is actually then being abused sexually, pointed with a gun at his head, and even deprived even of the upward movement for that matter. So this thing cannot be allowed. I think definitely there must be a clear, tangible move rather than just us talking words and all that, so that these predators can actually be exposed and dealt with, and women come out knowing that there is a user-friendly environment that has been created for them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Shlongu. General?
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. As far back as 2003, we seen the police, as women, we realized that there was a challenge in terms of sexual harassment within the workplace. Hence, when we established a women's network, amongst other objectives, we said we are going to ensure that we come up with policies that are talking to sexual harassment. But we also went loud, which is continuous, to ensure that we create awareness. And in 2011, we signed the agreement, the sexual harassment agreement at council that details exactly what needs to happen whenever sexual harassment cases are reported. But further, also within the discipline regulations, we ensured that the issues of sexual harassment are being dealt with. We have cases where members are dismissed within the service. In this presentation that I was going to be making, we also make visible for the past 5 years how many of the cases were reported and how many where we would have taken steps against members and what would have been the sanction. And also to say within the AHW environment, other than the awareness programs, there is counseling and women that are subjected to sexual harassment, they know for the fact that they have access to senior women like myself who have been a champion of the women's network, and I personally underwent a sexual harassment workshop myself so that I can have an understanding. And evident to that is how I took interest and ensured that I phoned the member, the constable, and ensured that we are able to talk and continuously will be supporting him. I want to emphasize that we within the organization, we do have systems and processes to deal with the case, and we obviously there will be a situation where members may not be comfortable. We also have sexual harassment officers that are trained, and we are saying if members are not comfortable to report to sexual harassment officers because at times you find that it's against the commander. They are even welcome to go to higher level. We will obviously continuously enhance as and when we pick up challenges, but also there will be personalities where it might be very difficult, but we are aware of the changes. But also, in addition, Chairperson, the Men for Change platform, which we created, amongst others, we are saying men should talk themselves. We created this platform for them to be able to engage on these issues, to say men and women fall within the organization, need each other, but we should not see each other as maybe being objects at times to be utilized for certain things. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think that is appropriate leadership, I think, from the DNC to personally deal with the issue, and we appreciate the commitment. Thank you very much. Honourable members, we come to the end of this meeting. Thank you to the National Commissioner, the Deputy National Commissioners, the Acting Head of the DPCI, and all the other officers for attending, and also the Media and Civil Society. We take note of the input from the National Commissioner and his commitments for March. March will be a very important month for implementation, so we will, of course, further deliberate on these issues. I think the next engagement with SAPS will be with regard to the station allocations, and also engagement with civil society in 2 weeks' time. So we're looking forward to that. Thank you very much, honourable members. The meeting is closed.